I'm Dave Heller, and this is Newsworks Tonight. Delaware Governor John Carney today announced plans for an independent review on the deadly hostage incident at the James T. Vaughn Correctional Center in Smyrna earlier this month. WHYY's Zoe Reed reports.
Former Delaware Supreme Court Justice Henry DuPont Ridgely and Judge William L. Chapman Jr. will conduct the review. Carney says the pair are well-respected judges who are independent thinkers. The governor says the review will begin after a criminal investigation is complete. Carney says he'll leave no stone unturned to prevent another corrections officer from being killed on the job.
I go to bed every night thinking about the security of those individuals that go into those institutions, really that stand between us and folks that would do us harm, and worry about whether they have appropriate security measures in place.
The report will release its findings and recommendations for improved security by June 1st, and Carney will work with the legislature to include changes in the next state budget. Jeff Klopp of the union representing Delaware correctional officers says he'll meet with the governor's chief of staff to discuss what could have been done to prevent Lieutenant Stephen Floyd from getting killed. He says the union is prepared to do its own investigation if it's not satisfied.
The Carney administration needs to make sure that the Correctional Officers Union is involved in all the process and that they weigh heavily on our suggestions because we are the ones that spend the time with the inmates. We know the problems.
Since the incident took place, 17 correctional officers have quit their jobs. Klopp says they're not paid enough for such a risky job. He blames former Governor Jack Markell for keeping salaries low and for relying on overtime to save money. From the Delaware desk, I'm Zoe Reed, WHYY News.
There's plenty of opinion about whether immigrants are good for the country and good for Pennsylvania. Keystone Crossroads' Margaret J. Krause looks at some of those arguments.
Elena Torres pulls up Google Maps on her phone. She drives all around Pittsburgh for work, a cleaning business she started in 2015.
I like organizing and fixing things.
It's a passion Torres blames her mom for. Growing up in Bogota, Colombia, Torres and her three siblings were each assigned daily chores. When Torres worked in the payroll department at Pittsburgh's Children's Hospital, her coworkers teased her about being OCD.
But the place where you live and how it's organized and everything that you have inside, it reflects in your life.
The same could be said about how cities welcome newcomers. Now a citizen, Torres says much of Pittsburgh's recent growth can be attributed to the contributions of immigrants.
Different cultures, people from different races, different ages, students from all over the world have helped in the growth of the city in the last years.
Numerous studies demonstrate that immigrants are expensive for state and local governments. But over time, they're a net boon to the federal coffers and the nation's economy. Peter Gonzalez is president and CEO of the Welcoming Center for New Pennsylvanians, located in Philadelphia. He says immigrants have revived the city, especially in neighborhoods with a lot of vacant buildings.
Just in Philadelphia's past 6 years, 95% of the new businesses created on commercial corridors in neighborhoods have been attributed to immigrants.
Last year, 45,000 more people left Pennsylvania than moved in, according to the U.S. Census. And each year, thousands of baby boomers retire. Immigration stems that outflow. More than 8% of Pittsburgh's population is foreign-born. In Philadelphia, it's about 13%. Most are working-age adults who bolster the tax rolls. But the taxes they pay don't balance out the services they use, says Robert Rector. He's a senior research fellow at the Heritage Foundation, a conservative think tank that favors stricter immigration. Rector says lower-skilled immigrants create competition for the country's most vulnerable people.
There's massive underemployment and unemployment dropping out of the labor force among the least skilled American workers, and they have first claim on our jobs and our sympathy.
Overall, the impact of immigration on the wages of native-born people is small, according to a 2016 report from the National Academies of Science, Engineering, and Medicine. Some studies put it at about 5%. However, it can vary widely depending on job type and local labor market. Torres and her company, Wink Maid Services, now employ 5 to 9 people, depending on the season. She says immigrants give up everything to come to the United States for a pretty simple reason.
They come to work hard, as myself, to make a good living, to be part of the society and make it better and bigger and stronger, not to make it weak or take advantage of it.
The authors of the National Academy's report on immigration stress that any analysis of the fiscal impact of immigrants depends in part on how you slice the data. And overall, they write, immigration is integral to the nation's economic growth. Margaret J. Krause, Keystone Crossroads.
Keystone Crossroads is a statewide public media initiative reporting on challenges facing Pennsylvania cities. WHYY leads the four-station partnership. It's a problem as old as school itself. How do you keep kids from missing time in the classroom? Research out of Philadelphia suggests the best remedy for absenteeism might be a dose of cold, hard truth. WHYY's Afi Wolfman-Aaron explains.
Here's the thing with parents. They tend to overestimate their own kids. It's true with intelligence, and it's true when it comes to absenteeism, says Harvard public policy professor Todd Rogers.
Parents underestimate their students' total absences by about half, which is to say if my kid has missed 20 days of school, I tend to think my kid has missed 10 days.
Rogers helped run a recent experiment in Philadelphia. The school district sent a series of postcards to families showing them how many times their kids had been absent.
What ends up happening is that the parents get their kids to school more when they come to realize how many days their kids have missed.
The students who were the subject of these little missives averaged one fewer absence than their classmates in the control group, and the intervention reduced the number of students who were chronically absent by 11%. Now you may be thinking, all of this from snail mail. Rogers says in this case, old school is actually more effective.
What's cool and what we find from families when we send these mailers is that they take on a social life in the home. They get put on the fridge. They get shown to other adults. They sit on the counter. They talk to the kids about them.
All that, and it's economical. It costs the district about $6 per student to squeeze an extra day of attendance. Rogers says his team has now replicated the results in 16 other school districts. It's not a panacea for truancy, he says, but it may be an efficient way to chip away at a big problem. I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron, WHYY News.
It was a surprise announcement last week. Seth Williams, the first black district attorney in the state of Pennsylvania, said he would not seek a third term. This came after Williams was fined for belatedly reporting that he'd accepted $160,000 in gifts. Our commentator, Solomon Jones, sees it as another step in the decline of black political stature in the city.
There are those in Philadelphia's black community who see Williams' fall as poetic justice. After all, Williams chose to prosecute five black elected officials for accepting bribes valued at far less than the gifts he failed to report. And when former Pennsylvania Attorney General Kathleen Kane said race played a role in the targeting of those black office holders, Williams insisted that race was not a factor. But Williams is not unique. He's part of a larger trend that's eating away at the very foundations of black political power. In short, African Americans are losing politically because we've leaned on a strategy of electing black politicians with the understanding that they would look out for black interests. Instead, too many of them have looked out for themselves. As a result, black voters have taken a dim view of political participation. And with the exception of the elections that brought us Barack Obama, our local voting numbers have trended downward. Our political influence has followed suit. That resulted in the election of Philadelphia Democrat Jim Kenney, who won the mayoral primary with just 27% of eligible voters participating. In a city where Democrats vastly outnumber Republicans, and blacks who tend to vote Democrat are nearly half the population, Kenney's election seemed to be an anomaly. But now, I'm not so sure. During the mayoral election, the African-American community split when influential black politicians like Dwight Evans endorsed Kenney for mayor. Kenney and the labor unions that backed him returned the favor, endorsing Evans for Congress. That kind of deal is common, and there's nothing corrupt about exchanging endorsements. But black voters are increasingly asking what we get out of the deal. The answer, too often, is nothing. That's why many black voters in Pennsylvania, and indeed nationwide, scoffed at the notion that Hillary Clinton was the heir apparent to Obama. And after new voting laws targeted minority voters, black turnout dipped 11% in the presidential election. That decline, along with the lack of enthusiasm among Democrats in general, helped swing the election to Republican Donald Trump. Now black voters are at a crossroads. We face the grim reality that too many black elected officials are being ushered out of office. And while many that remain are serving the community, there are also many others who are not. If black politicians continue to disappoint us, they'll ultimately lose their seats, not through the conscious efforts of an engaged black electorate, but through the apathy of blacks who don't see the point in voting. It's not too late to reverse the political decline in the black community, but in order to do so, black elected officials must give disillusioned voters a reason to participate. Otherwise, everyone loses. I'm Solomon Jones.
Solomon Jones writes the Philadelphia Experiment at newsworks.org. The Fairmount Water Works in Philadelphia is showing off its muscles. A new permanent exhibit at the former municipal pumping station near the Art Museum will feature freshwater mussels as nature's water filtration system. From WHYY's Arts and Culture Desk, Peter Crimmins reports it doubles as an experimental science station.
Mussels, those black bivalves that taste great in a buttery broth, are able to filter 20 gallons of water a day. That's each mussel. So if you have a bank of thousands of mussels, you can keep a whole river clean. Unfortunately, for the last 200 years, we have treated our rivers as industrial sites. So mussels living on a diet of toxins have died off. But Angela Padaletti, a senior scientist with the Partnership for the Delaware Estuary, says mussels are now poised for a comeback.
So we've taken down dams. Our water quality is much improved. For those reasons, we think that we can introduce these babies and these adult mussels back into the river system and that they will survive and thrive.
Padaletti is talking about freshwater mussels, which are not suitable for eating, but are excellent for purifying water. She's carefully nurturing baby mussels in tanks inside the Fairmount Water Works Interpretive Center to be released into selected parts of Philadelphia's waterways. The purpose is twofold. The first reason is to teach people how important mussels are to our rivers. The problem is, mussels might be the least sexy of all aquatic life. They are literally bottom feeders. Exhibition designer Victoria Prezzi created interactive multimedia displays that show mussels as quiet and reliable characters that are vital to the health of a river.
The mussel looks like a rock. A mussel doesn't have eyes. And so how do we start to play with the characteristics of a mussel but not do it in a way that diminishes the authenticity of the story? So we didn't want to turn this into a cartoon.
The second part of the mussel hatchery is to do the hard science of developing a healthy mussel habitat. The Philadelphia Water Department is watching closely to see how the hatchery can be scaled up to become part of the citywide water purification system. I'm Peter Crimmins, WHYY News.
You might be looking forward to a date tonight with your special someone at a nice restaurant. A group of women from suburban Philadelphia celebrated Valentine's Day in a different way over the weekend by showing their appreciation for complete strangers. Joel Wolfram reports from WHYY's Behavioral Health Desk.
Patricia Gallagher and her crew of 10 volunteers came bearing gifts and goodies to Open Arms of Nicetown 2. That's a Northeast Philadelphia shelter providing transitional housing for homeless vets. Gallagher says she wanted to let the vets know that they matter and honor them for their sacrifices.
And we wanted to bring you some treats. We want to give everybody a nice warm blanket. And the symbolism of the blanket would be warmth and love. So, can everybody help me give everybody a blanket?
The homemade crocheted blankets brought some color to the beige cafeteria where a few dozen of the home's nearly 40 residents gathered, including Dwayne Lowry.
They bought clothing, they bought food, and they bought love. That's the most important thing that they bought. And we need something to lift our spirits because a lot of us suffer from depression and, you know, have been really down.
Lowry served in the Army as a missile and radar operator from 1980 to 85. The shelter staff coordinates treatment for PTSD and other mental health issues that the home's director, Lauren X. Jordan, says are common among the residents.
They're here to stay 8 months to a year. We also put them in intensive outpatient programs so that they can get treatment if needed. Inside here, they shoot pool.
The pool table in question was covered with donated winter clothing provided by Gallagher and her crew on Saturday. But they brought another game with them to fill in.
I I-27.
I-27.
There you go.
You got the tea.
Oh.
Don Hoffman was one of the lucky winners. He said the celebration built up his spirits.
I really needed it. I really did. I think it's wonderful.
For WHYY News, I'm Joel Wolfram.
That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yaakov, Kimberly Haas, Ty Johnson, and Brett Rader. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.